And we are back and better than ever. Today is episode 58 of The Main Event. Ryan Jarrell and Brian Stackpole here. Today we have a special edition. It's the coaches edition, as we have the Irish hand grenade Marcus Davis, who is helping Tim Boach prepare to step into the octagon and face Johnny Hendricks at UFC Fight Night 112 on June 25th. Also, we have Stephen Wright, who is Johnny Hendricks' striking coach. So we're going to talk to both of these guys and really just break down how this fight is supposed to play out and, you know, really dive into it, because obviously we've had Boach on the show numerous times, and we actually have had Johnny on the show before too, Brian. So now we're going to get to see both sides of the coaching angles as how they're going to get ready for this big fight.
And we can ask Stephen Wright too what it's like to be one of three well-known Wrights. The pitcher from the city of Boston, mm-hmm. the Red Sox, who's now on the DL, and also the comedian Stephen Wright.
That's
so
right.
We'll see if he thinks he's the better Stephen Wright out of those two.
I'm sure he's going to say, because he could kick both of their butts.
That's a good point. Very good point. And I would have to agree with him, because he can definitely kick my butt, too.
Yeah, I guess he was a really well-known and accomplished kickboxer. And he's doing some big things in the world of coaching right now. I spoke to him just the other day here, before we going to get ready to do this interview here shortly. And he was telling me that he was on the other side of the country helping some other fighters prepare. So he's been a very busy man, and a lot of things going on in his world.
Absolutely. So looking forward to seeing what he has to say about that fight, because it's a big one for
it's
not
huge.
Just Tim Boach, but it's also for Johnny Hendricks too. A win can continue their careers and maybe move them back up the ladder again, though I think the time of seeing Big Rig or the Barbarian as a title contender are probably over, but they can still put out some incredibly, incredibly fun fights and continue their career in the Ultimate Fighting Championship, and a win would go a long way to doing that. A loss, though, and we seriously might be considering for each of these gentlemen whether or not this might be the final one inside the cage.
I sure hope not. I mean, this
I know,
is,
me too.
Boach was on a nice little win streak before he fell to Jacare. I mean, but who hasn't Jacare?
Exactly.
But I think the thing for Tim is if he can get this fight, get this win, and then maybe pick up another one or two, he can climb back into that top, eight or nine area in the middleweight division. And then you never know. I mean, he's still young enough where he has that power. He's never out of it with that. So I'm hesitant to say that, a loss here, puts him on the chopping block. And, the same thing for Johnny. I mean, welterweight title contender. A lot of people feel like he won that fight against GSP. Then he did win the one against Robbie Lawler. So, he's held the gold before. And now this is his second fight at 185, and he did win the first one against Hector Lombard. And Hector Lombard is a beast of a man.
Mm-hmm.
So, Johnny beat him at 185. He's proven that he's got the ability to stay here in this division. So this is a big fight for both guys, for sure.
But I'm saying here is I just don't see a title in the future of either of the guys.
Yeah,
and it's not like their careers are over if they lose this one, but you do have to start thinking about it. Realistically, in the sport, where if you're Johnny Hendricks, and before the Lombard fight, you had lost three straight, albeit to Gastelum,
Wonderboy
was in the mix, Magny, and all those.
I was surprised he lost to Magny, to be honest. I didn't
see
that one coming.
Me too, because I thought that would be the return to form.
Yeah.
He'd come back, and he'd start a little bit of a winning streak. Then you even date back, he beat Matt Brown prior to that one, lost to Lawler, beat Lawler, and then GSP beat him. And that's what the streak has gone to. And if I'm tallying it up right here, he's had 5 losses in his last 8 fights.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has fallen off a little bit. But that's the thing. Like, when you get in those dog fights where you're just throwing bombs,
right.
And Hendricks and Boach have both been in fights where they've taken some big shots to give some serious punishment to their opponent. That has a way of adding up on you as you get longer in the tooth in your career. And it shortens your career because a human being can only take so much punishment. You talk about all these football players that are, that are retired now that battle CTE and they have all these issues now post their career, and it's a serious thing. And I think as the sport continues to move on, you're going to see it more in mixed martial artists.
Right.
That's why I think getting out at the right time is important. Is it now for either of these guys? I don't know. I sure hope not. I love watching both of them compete, but time will tell.
And we'll have to ask this of actually of all these guys, and Marcus Davis would be a perfect one to discuss this
yeah.
with, is when is the right time? Do you decide that if your UFC career is over, is that the end of the line in your mixed martial arts career? Or do you continue to try? Do you try to maybe boost up a region where you're currently residing in? Do you go back home to fight in a region like Marcus did? He fought Ryan Sanders here in the state of Maine. Does he try to do something like that when your career is over? Or do you just say, I've had a good run, it's time to give myself my education over from all the time I've learned inside the cage, too? So this is why it's such an intriguing fight, and we have that main connection with Boach, but we also have this connection with Big Rick, Johnny Hendricks. We've had him on the show before. We've loved watching him inside the cage, and that's why I think this is such a unique fight and why we're dedicating these episodes to it.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I can't wait for this fight. We've talked about this numerous times. Both of these guys have fireworks in their hands. Mm-hmm. If they connect with you, it's very possible that you're going night-night, and it's a really intriguing matchup. I mean, Boach is the bigger guy here. He's fought at 185 and 205 for most of his career here, and Johnny has been a welterweight.
Yeah.
So, you know, now he's up in middleweight. It's going to be interesting to see how Johnny's skill set and size translate to the middleweight division when you go up against a legitimate 185er like Tim Boach.
And this is a really fun card. I absolutely love this one, not just because we see Tim Boach in the co-main event against Johnny Hendricks, but we have Devin Powell in there against Horcher, which I think is going to be fun, especially get some interest to the Maine and New England MMA fans. But throw in there Clay Guida, a guy I enjoy watching. I absolutely enjoy watching him, especially when his hair's whipping around there.
Yeah.
BJ Penn's going to be facing in that matchup against Silver, right?
Dennis Seaver.
Sorry.
Talk about someone that needs to hang it up. I'm sorry.
You don't like BJ Penn?
I love BJ Penn. I think he's an all-time great. Hang it up, bro. You've been doing this forever. That second GSP fight literally put him into over-the-hill retirement, like, right now. I mean, he was not – he's never been the same guy since. And when you've been the best pound-for-pound on the planet, he was at one point, you know – and now you're just a shadow of the fighter that you were. That's not the way that the hardcore fans want to remember a legend like BJ Penn. Retire. He needs to. He could go into doing so many other things with the skill sets that he has.
Right.
Talk about being a great teacher and coach. I mean, holy cow. That guy could do amazing things in Hawaii for upcoming fighters. There could be many more Max Holloways coming because of BJ Penn's tutelage.
Mm, it's a very good point. And again, it comes down to when you decide to hang it up, when you decide that your time is now to move on and to leave the cage. But again, when you're a warrior and you're fighting for so many years over and over again, it's hard to say, you know what? I can't do it. I got to stop.
Yeah. Now, it's, you know, we got to ask Marcus about BJ because BJ Penn is actually Marcus's favorite all-time fighter.
Mm.
And so he's on the same card.
That's going to be weird. It's going to be weird, isn't it? Because he's probably not going to want to stop watching him fight. So he's going to want him to continue, I imagine. We'll find out for Marcus.
And Marcus, I remember, showed me a picture a while back of him and BJ when they were both, you know, super young guys and they were both fighting in their primes and whatnot. And how Marcus's face beamed, which is kind of like cool to see like a guy who is like a top 10 in like two different weight classes in the UFC. Yeah. I mean, the Irish hand grenade, for crying out loud. And he's showing, he's like fanboying out to BJ Penn.
And not just that, but this whole fight card, the main event is going to be absolutely phenomenal. And I imagine as we get closer and closer to the actual date, we are going to see some sort of an altercation between those gentlemen after what we saw in the big lead up to that fight, too. I mean, when you call out the moms, Ryan, when you call out the moms, you're going to start seeing some fury. And that definitely happened at that one. So we'll see. It should be a good card. And it's, again, is it the final one right before the there's actually one more, I guess, before that UFC pay-per-view 213. So it's one of those lead-up fights and lead-up fight cards to get to that culmination that is International Fight Week. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, a lot of good things to be had here. And again, when you're coming into the summer months, that's when you get to International Fight Week. They have you know, some great cards right in the summer months where people just clamor to get in there and see. You know, everyone wants to buy the pay-per-views. Buffalo Wild Wings is packed. You know, and that's just how I like it, because there's nothing more exciting to me, especially when football and basketball is gone and all you have is the dog days of summer in baseball. You need to have more fights to watch, and so that makes me happy.
By the way, I mentioned Devin Powell. Remember the guy he fought in his debut in the UFC, Dracar Close?
Yep.
He is scheduled for a fight on the one on July 7th, the day before UFC 213. You know who he's going against?
The guy with the black dude with the blonde
that
mohawk.
Red, is it? I thought it was red mohawk.
Like,
I think
Diakassi or something like that, right?
Yeah, he's facing him on the main card.
That's a pretty darn good fight.
That is going to be a fun one. I know Jakar is fairly new into the UFC as well. That was his debut, and
we'll have to get him back on the show.
Let's put it this way. That's a nice little fight, too. So I'm looking forward to that one. Dekesi has three fights under his belt, and he has just been phenomenal. A KO in the first round, 30 seconds in, back in London in March of this year. So, yeah, should be fun. Should be a fun card, and I'm glad we get to break it down a little bit more here with one particular fight here this week as well.
Oh, absolutely. Well, why don't we get into our first guest? We'll be right back with the Irish Hand Grenade, Marcus Davis. This is Ryan Jarrell from The Main Event. We are proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. The Sea Dog is located in Bangor at 26 Front Street, right next to Penobscot River. You can call them at 947-8009 or visit them at seadogbrewing.com. Very excited to announce that the Sea Dog has a new summer menu. There are so many great things on this menu that are so just unbelievably mouthwatering. I could go through this whole thing, but I'm just going to give you a couple, just to give you a little taste, just to give you a little tease here. One of the new items, the ahi tuna poke. Raw sashimi tuna with avocado dressed in Hawaiian-style soy sesame citrus sauce, served with crispy wonton chips and garnished with wakame seaweed salad and tobiko fish roe. Wow, I feel like I'm in Hawaii right now getting ready to dip my toes into the ocean and eat some unbelievable food. Also, if you want a little bit more of a Maine type of style, they have the lobster mac and cheese, a broiled top brown skillet of orchetta pasta, cheddar mac and cheese sauce, and fresh picked lobster meat. And if you wanted to, there is a double order available. Good Lord. One of my favorites is the fried calamari. Same preparation, but now served in only one size only, a 6-ounce portion. God, I love calamari. I can't wait to get there this summer and eat some of that. And also, the Sea Dog's beers are always on tap. Unbelievable. The Blue Paw, my favorite. Brian's favorite. So many great things to do in one fantastic place. On 26 Front Street, the Sea Dog Brewing Company. On the phone now is a former UFC star who is now the head coach of current UFC middleweight, Tim the Barbarian Boach. And he is also the master coach at Tap Out Fitness Raleigh in North Carolina. The Irish Hand Grenade, Marcus Davis, is back on The Main Event. Marcus, it's a pleasure to have you as always. I got to ask you, things are great, going great for you in North Carolina. What is the biggest difference between living down there in the southern part of the country versus being back up here in Maine?
Down here, you know, in February, I was walking around in a T-shirt, and people down here thought I was a madman. So it's completely different. And, you know, I just think, and I don't have all the same, you know, I guess down here a lot of people have allergy issues, but I don't have them anywhere near that I did when I was in Maine either. So I love it.
Now, I've never been a big fan of the cold here in Maine, but Maine definitely has its perks. What are the biggest things that you miss about living here in Maine?
I mean, you know, the people, obviously, that's a big thing. You know, there's certain things that, you know, the main, you know, the whole area, like, you know, with the woods and the landscape with like, you know, the waters and everything that's so close by, like here anyways, you know, like when I go into the woods and stuff, it's not the same. Like it's not thick, deep, like forest, like areas really. And the vegetation and stuff like that is quite different. But I'm not also surrounded by, like, you know, when I lived in Bangor, I could literally drive 5 minutes down the road from where I lived and, you know, Pushaw Lake was there and, you know, you can go anywhere that you want. You can hit water pretty fast. You know, Bar Harbor's a gorgeous area to go to. Where I'm at, you know, it takes a good 2 hours to get to the beaches. Now, the beaches down here are amazing, so I'm going to say that. I mean, they're just off the charts. But also, you deal with a lot of sharks and stuff like that. Yeah. So I just saw a thing where they were showing not far from here is Myrtle Beach, and they were doing an aerial view, and it showed all the people playing in the water, and it looked like there were 100 sharks that weren't very far from where the people were. So, you know, I'm not so cool with that.
Yeah.
So that was a good thing in Maine is that, you know, you weren't worried about shark attacks and stuff like that.
Yeah, very true. And another thing that I would worry about, and I'm curious if you if you had any run-ins, but I hate snakes, and there are no poisonous snakes in Maine. There are a ton down there. Have you had to deal with anything like that?
Yeah, but I'm so as a kid growing up, I was a real nerdy kid. So a lot of people don't know, but I was a complete geek. And so as a really young kid, and then into my teens, I was kind of studying herpetology, which is the study of reptiles and amphibians. So even in Bangor, all the pet stores in Bangor used to have my name and my phone number. And if they got in a reptile that was sick, they would actually call me, and I would come in and I go, oh, that's got visceral grout, or that has infectious stomatitis, or it's, you know, and I could actually diagnose, and they would give me the reptiles, and I would take care of them and bring them back. Or even the flower shop, Frederick's Flower Shop, one time called me and said, we just got a delivery of flowers, these tropical flowers, and this lizard jumped out and started running across our floor. And we were wondering if you could come and catch it. And I came and I caught it, and it was a brown basilisk. So I'm real nerdy like that. So we came out of my house, and there was a king snake, which isn't poisonous, but it was like 4-foot king snake sitting in my dooryard. And my family was like, my girls were freaking out. And I went down, I walked over, picked it up, carried it to the front of my lawn, and explained to them, you know, these are the good snakes. These snakes eat actual rattlesnakes and stuff like that. So yeah, down here we do have, you know, rattlesnakes, they have pit vipers, they've got, you know, there's some scary stuff down here. I'm more hesitant with, like, the brown recluse spider that's down here. So I've seen people being bit and what that looks like, and it can be a painful bite, and it can be a scary thing, and you got to get some immediate attention. So, yeah, you got some creepy crawlies down here, but, you know, that stuff doesn't freak me out as much.
Yeah, all in all, it just seems like things are going great for you. Talk a little bit about how the new gym is going, and what are some of the similarities and differences from your old stomping grounds up here at Team Irish?
Yeah, so, you know, what happened is that when I came down here, I was working in the law enforcement end, and but I got recruited online. They found out that I was actually down here, and asked me to come in to talk about this gym that was going to open up. And I ended up accepting the position, and then I flew out to New Mexico and had to stay there with Greg and train with him, and then had to go through the progress of, there's these three tests that you got to go through all the whole levels and stuff like that, and to be able to become, you know, a master coach under him and be able to, you know, belt people in his style. So after completing that, I came here. So the way this kind of gym is our gym is a 600 square foot gym. One half of the gym is covered with fitness equipment, and it's all real good stuff. It's all Hammer Strength, which is top of the line. And then we've got, you know, the Aerodyne bikes, and we've got Life, we've got fitness, treadmills, and so we got everything you need. And then on the other side, I think we have probably like 10 or 12 heavy bags. We have these things called Focus Masters that are they're like kind of like a padding system, so like focus pads. Mm-hmm. And you can turn them, and you can put like up to 4 different pads in different angles and work on specific techniques and stuff with that. So it's a pretty you know, nice layout. It's absolutely gorgeous, all brand new. But the difference, I would say the biggest difference is I really work with mostly everyday people. So like, you know, salesmen or saleswomen and doctors and, you know, people that just have regular jobs. I've only got like maybe 1 or 2 people that are here that are actually thinking maybe in the future they would fight. So we're not really a fighting gym per se. We're more of a MMA fitness kind of gym, and you know, we cater to everybody. It's not, you know, when people think of MMA, a lot of times, even now, you still think of, you know, bad haircuts, bad tattoos, and tap out shirts. So that's not what you see here. It's you know, you see the tap out shirts, but it's not that grinding, scary, intimidating kind of feel that I guess MMA's had for a long time. So it's pretty laid back.
So this is more of a facility just for people to live a healthy lifestyle and to stay in shape or get in shape.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're somebody who's like, you know, Planet Fitness isn't cutting it for you, you know, showing up by yourself and trying to do work at Planet Fitness, and that's not working. A lot of those people come over here because we have a very, you know, it's a team-like atmosphere, like it would be for an MMA team, and there's, you know, instruction going on the whole time. So, like my what I do here is I teach the Greg Jackson MMA program, and then I teach what's called next level strike. So it's the higher level for striking, and then I teach another class called MMA grappling, which is grappling based on not sport grappling, which is very different, you know, gi and stuff. This is a no-gi program that would entail, you know, the thought that you could also be struck. And then I also teach what they call tap-out sweat, which is just a physical conditioning class. And then we have other classes outside of that that I do not teach, which is like, you know, boot camp classes and just a bunch of different fitness classes. So.
And so how does Tim Boach incorporate into your day-to-day work there? Is he still pretty close to you? Obviously, you're helping him prepare for his big fight with Hendricks. How often
right.
are you getting a chance to work with him down there?
So obviously, he's here when he's in camp. He's here typically. He'll do a couple of weeks, and then he goes home for a couple of days, then he comes back for the last couple of weeks, and we do things like that. So he doesn't train here, so when we're here, he doesn't come in a tap out. We train at a place that's about 15 minutes away from my house. It's called TFTC, Tactical Fighting Training Center. And that school has several black belts that are under Hoist Gracie and a lot of like high-level grappling guys and decent kickboxers and stuff like that. So that's where I take him to get his sparring and his work and stuff, and I do all of our padding and everything there. And I also go there, and I train some guys there too. So I spend, you know, when Tim's here, I spend about 12 to 15 hours a week training Tim. Then I'll spend about 17 hours a week here at Tap Out. And then I've been doing a lot. So, like, I'm kind of segueing into, I started a new company down here, and Tim's, we're partners in it, but, and I train, I just specifically work with LEO, so law enforcement officers, and I was, this year they have, every year they have these giant, conferences where they bring all of the law enforcement in, and it's all the SWAT and all the special ops guys that they have for law enforcement, and they get together and they talk about you know, new technology that's coming out, and then they do active training and stuff like that, and then they do combatives and everything. So I was the combatives coach this year for the state, and that really took off. And so I've been spending time training. I've trained the Cary PD, Raleigh PD, Burlington PD, Clayton PD. So I'm working with a lot of them now, and I'm looking to kind of like segue a lot into that because my background, like a lot of people don't know, but I went to the 100-hour reserve officer training as a kid right out of high school, you know, through the police academy that they offer. And before that, you know, I was boxing for the PAL, so I was around a lot of the police in Bangor and everything. And then I trained with Tony Blauer, who was like one of the biggest names in law enforcement training. And he's the one that did the spear system and all of that. And so that's a lot of, I'm spending a lot of time doing that and doing a lot of firearms training. So I've done real world carbine and handgun tactics. And one of the guys that Tim and I are really close with down here, he's a law enforcement officer, and he's also the firearms teacher, and we spend a lot of time at his house, and we'd literally get into vehicles and shoot from vehicles and do all these different tactics, and we do like physical training and then try to shoot while you're tired. And so it's a completely different thing than like MMA, but I've really taken on to onto that. And actually right now they're trying to get me to become the teacher there's a place called Wake Tech University where they do what they call the BLET training, which is basic law enforcement training. And they're really trying to push me to go into there and become one of the teachers there and train the guys that are the reserve officers that are just about to go into police work.
Now, obviously, we live in a crazy world nowadays, and I have the utmost respect for the law enforcement, for everything that they do to protect us. How gratifying is it for you, you know, to make this transition? I mean, you're still, you know, doing the MMA coaching thing now, but how gratifying is it for you to be able to help these guys do their job better and to make them feel more prepared going into their workforce and protecting everyone here in our great country?
Yeah, you know, I do get a lot out of that. It's like I've told people before, you know, training MMA fighters is one thing because, you know, MMA fighters are willing participants that are going into the sport and they want to fight. And there's a connection there, you know, to be able to be part of that and ride that success. And there's another connection that you get when you're teaching just everyday people, and then one of them come back to you and say, you won't believe this, I got attacked or something like that, which has happened several times with me where they've told me that somebody's attacked them or things have happened and they've been able to actually get out of that situation through something that they've done training with me. And now it's that other part where, you know, I used to travel around basically the world. I was in Europe a lot, training at like Kaiserslautern, Ramstein, and Ansbach, and all these different military bases when I was working with the military personnel over there, doing combatives with them. Now, I've got a lot of pride in doing that because I never got to serve. You know, that wasn't something that I ever did, and my whole family did. Like, you know, my wife was in the Air Force, my brother was in the Marine Corps, both of my grandparents were in the Navy, you know, so. And I never got to do something like that. So it does feel good to be able to be part of that and know that, you know, maybe something that I might show them or help them with might save their life. So that does give you a sense of, you know, pride in your work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just got to be an amazing feeling to have. I mean, obviously, you're doing phenomenal things there, and you're continuing to work with Tim the Barbarian Boach, who has got this big fight coming up. Both Brian and myself can't wait to see this fight. Him and Johnny Hendricks, we've had them both on the show. They're knockout artists. You know, how has Tim looked in camp so far, and what type of things have you guys been working on in preparation for Johnny?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know how it is. You don't want to give anything away, but Tim's looked great in camp. And, you know, I've listened to interviews and stuff that Johnny Hendricks has done. So, you know, you can only take all those with a grain of salt because, you know, they could be saying things to kind of manipulate right. The thoughts might be in the fight. But this is kind of the way that I would say this. There are specific things about Tim. There are things that Tim can do that people don't know he can do. Okay, so there are some things that he does, like, I think, amazing. And he's never just let that happen and let it go in a fight. And that's what my focus has been with Tim is again, trying to get him to go to see these special talents that he has that haven't come out in his fighting. Now, there are times that I've looked at everything that Tim did. If there's a video of Tim Boach and fighting, I've dug it up and I've watched it. And I've seen flashes of it, but he just doesn't understand or hasn't understood how dominant and how powerful some of the things that he does is because he's not on the receiving end. So we spent a lot of time in camp with me trying to get him to, you know, discover and uncover these tools that if he uses them and he pushes this and uses this, it's going to change everybody's approach when they fight him. So, you know, if you know, either way, like I think Tim, how he fought Sean Salmon or how he fought Pacquiao or how he fought even Thales Latus, if he shows up and fights like that, he'll beat Hendricks. If he fights and does the stuff that we've worked on in camp that he's been doing and he's been pulling off and aspiring and the stuff that he can do, it'll be a bonus night for him. So it'll be, he'll have an amazing night and he'll shock some people.
What is it that you think Johnny Hendricks does best in there?
I think that Hendricks does a good job of kind of controlling a lot of times. So, like, he'll be able to kind of cut the ring off, cut the cage off, I mean, and then be able to control people, whether it's against the cage or get them on the ground and kind of stifle whatever they're trying to do. And then he chips away. So, you know, Johnny Hendricks was looked at as a big knockout puncher, but he hasn't really done that in a very long time. And I think he's only really knocked out maybe three people in the UFC, I think, out of all of his fights. So we haven't really seen that. I mean, but we're prepared for it, you know. But I would say it's mostly his wrestling and his control. And I know Johnny is a, you know, obviously at 170 pounds, Johnny was a very powerful, strong guy. And he's moving up from 170 to 185. What you need to understand about Tim is that Tim was a pretty strong guy when Tim fought at the heavyweight. Then when Tim moved down to light heavyweight, he was a stronger, real strong light heavyweight. Now at a middleweight, he's a freaky, strong, big middleweight. So, you know, the strength things there, and you know, Tim's also a wrestler, and I think that Tim's top game, like as far as the jiu-jitsu or the submission game goes, I think Tim's a little better. But the biggest difference between the two is the versatility of striking. So Tim can do everything, where Johnny, you know, throws some basic kicks and stuff like that. He hasn't really opened up and done a lot with them. Like in his fight against the jiu-jitsu guy, the judo guy, I can't remember his name, who was in Bellator before. In that fight, you know, he threw some leg kicks and stuff, but it was a very close fight. And when Tim fought that guy, you know, he buried him. Like, he beat him every single round and outstruck him and was able to outfight him. So, you know, Tim, I think, is just a more versatile striker. And if he uses that versatility in this fight, it's going to really show. And he's been, you know, obviously I have to glove up, and I've been, and, you know, and I really don't spar much because I have some, you know, issues with, you know, some health issues. But, you know, for this camp especially, you know, I've watched Hendricks' tapes and all his fights. And I've mimicked as much as I can of him. And I'm a lot bigger, too, than Johnny Hendricks. I mean, Hendricks and I are about the same height. I think I'm about a half an inch taller. But, you know, I walk around at 210 now. You know, I bench close to 400 pounds. I'm not, like, I'm not who I used to be. I'm not a small guy. I'm a much bigger guy. So, and I'm a much better striker than Johnny Hendricks. So, and we're both southpaws. So, that being said, you know, I've been in there with Tim and, you know, and using typical southpaw techniques that, you know, southpaws will use, and I watch Hendricks, and I've seen him try to use specific things, and then trying to, you know, get in there on Tim too and rough him up and try to bully, you know, grab him and push on him and stuff like that, like Hendricks would. So, you know, and we have a good team down here of guys that have been really pushing Tim too in his workouts. So high level guys on the ground, and we have a very specific plan, and Tim's been able to execute that plan in the sparring. So we're very confident.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I was going to ask is, obviously, Tim has fought at 185 and even 205 in his career, and Johnny has predominantly been a welterweight. This is his second fight in the middleweight division, and to clarify from earlier, he has had five knockouts in his UFC career to Amir Sadala, Charlie Brenneman, TJ Waldberger, John Fitch, and Martin Campman was the last one. But the size difference, is that going to be a huge deal here? Because you were saying that you're bigger than Johnny, and obviously I've seen Tim. He's a massive guy. So there's a reason for weight classes. We've talked about that on this show a zillion times. I would imagine that's going to play a huge factor here in this fight, right?
I would think so. You know, you never know. And but we've seen Hendricks, he's had the one fight at 185, and that one fight was with a very small 185er, where, you know, Tim is 6'1", okay? So, you know, he's already got, you know, at least three to 4 inches on Johnny with a height. And Johnny has, you know, remarked and said that, you know, Tim has a longer reach than him, so they know Tim has a longer reach. So, you know, you've got that, and then you get the fact that when they clinch, if Tim just uses your balance and being heavy and as good and not lazy in the clinch, he could really tire Hendricks out in the clinch. And if he ends up on bottom, if Hendricks ends up on bottom, he's going to have some real difficulties with Tim, because Tim's just a big, strong guy. So big bone, too. Like, you go to grab Tim's wrist, and it's hard to hold on to him. So, you know, I think that, you know, as far as, like, you just look at them, when you're going to see them in the cage together, it's going to look like completely two different guys. So I try to make Tim not get heavier than, like, our perfect weight after he makes 186, which is the heaviest it can be. When we get him to 186, we try to keep him at least 208 or a little below for the night of the fight. So that's where he typically goes in. So he goes in at 208 pounds, but he still has the strength and power that he had where he walks around at like 230 and 225. So that's quite a bit. You know, that's a big difference.
I remember you telling me back in the day when you used to cut down from 220, 225 to make 170. Yeah. That's just, I just can't believe it. That just, it must take so much discipline and just unbelievable heart to get down and do that. Like, it takes a special kind of human being to make that weight and cut so much. I mean, so Tim naturally is 20 pounds easy is what he's cutting to make 185 fight in and fight out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. You know, and what I did like this camp is, like, when he got here, when we started camp, he was, I want to say that day, I think it was 205. So that was like weeks ago. So that was great. So, like, we've had camps where he's come into camp and he's been 225. So he was already down to 205, and he'd been doing a lot of wrestling, you know, with bigger, stronger guys. So I've been, you know, I've been out to Pennsylvania and trained at Tim's gym, and, you know, he has some huge wrestlers there, man. Like, you know, guys that are close to 300 pounds, like Billy Beck and Bangor. So, you know, that are high-level wrestlers. So he's wrestling guys that are that big. So when guys like, you know, whether it's me or whoever latches onto Tim, it's, you know, he doesn't feel that. It just isn't the same for him. You know, he feels pretty much at home.
Now, obviously,
he can throw us around.
Yeah, he's a beast. I can't wait to see him get in there with Johnny here. Obviously, you see him getting the victory here. Do you see this going the distance, or do you anticipate Tim finishing this fight before the last bell rings here?
Well, you know, I typically don't like to call, like, a lot of these kind of things, but I will say this, is that if Tim is able to do the things that we've been working on and the things that we've done, that he's been, you know, like I said, kind of known that he has those talents, but he hasn't just let them go. Like, he just hasn't opened up with those talents. If he does that, he'll finish him. I see him finishing him. He could finish him very quickly and early, because it will surprise the crap out of everybody of what happened. So it's not something that people would actually think. When they think of Tim Boach fighting, it's going to be hard for them to picture this happening. But if he does that, I could see a real quick fight. And if he doesn't, and he's, you know, off his game, I still see it being a long, drawn-out battle, but Tim winning. Because the longer it stays up, the better chances it is that Tim wins this fight, because he's just such a way better striker as far as both, you know, having to do with movement, head movement, footwork, and versatility than Hendricks. Now, you know, the only way Hendricks I see, two ways Hendricks could win this fight, and that's landing a lucky shot, you know, that one big shot, you know, hurting Tim, or being able to somehow get Tim on the ground and hold him there. But, I've seen Hendricks do that with guys that were at 170, but a guy at 185 who's actually a heavyweight, I don't see that happening. I think that when he gets in there with Tim and he feels how strong Tim is, he'll be quite surprised.
Well, again, both Brian and myself are salivating, waiting for this fight to get here. One thing I definitely got to ask you, correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember you saying back in the day that BJ Penn was your favorite fighter of all time,
yep.
And he is going to be on this card taking on Dennis Seaver. What do you expect us to see from BJ? Obviously, he's been around for a while. He's been in a ton of wars. He's almost on his way out. Would you like to see him retire soon and maybe transition into coaching? I mean, we've talked about, damage. And when you're a fighter for as long as you were, for example, you don't want to take too much because you're going to have problems as you get older down the line. And I'm sure,
right.
You know, you want to see these guys, live long and healthy lives. So I'm just curious your thoughts on what we're going to see from BJ and what you think that what you would do if you were in his shoes right now at the point he is in his career.
Well, what I think and what I hope we see from BJ is I would like him to, rather than staying far on the outside, which he unfortunately wasn't able to close the gap in that last fight, he needs to, use his hands to get closer. And when people do kick, he's got to have some sort of confidence in either, shooting on the kick or being able to catch the kick and go for the takedown or whatever. If they hit the ground, he'll submit Seaver, fast. I mean, Seaver can't survive with him on the ground. I know Seaver's been in there for a while, and he's much better than he was, but I've seen him get submitted by guys that aren't even close to BJ Penn's, BJ Penn's abilities. But then BJ has great hands. Like, people don't know that, but, you wouldn't think of BJ as a great boxer, but it's such a timing. It's such great timing with his hands. So, I think I would like to see BJ getting in there, using his hands, setting up, getting the takedown, and finishing him on the ground. I'd much rather see that than have him standing up and having a hard fight and getting chipped away or anything like that you saw in the last one. And as far as BJ's health and all that concerns, this is the way I look at it. BJ's a man. He's going to do what he wants to do. I don't think anybody should ever tell him what he needs to do, or I don't think he should ever listen to anybody unless it's a loved one. The difference with me is, I had a family, I had kids, a wife, and I had the health problems, and my wife was a nurse, and so my health problems had just piled up and piled up over 22 years of fighting, and just got to a point where, I had the good days weren't as many as the bad days. So, and then with loved ones, you got to do what's right for them too. So I got to be around. I got to be able to be here and provide and stuff like that. So, BJ just needs to do what BJ needs to do for BJ. And if he's in a situation like that where, he has a wife and kids and people telling him that they want him to maybe hang it up, that's a decision he has to make. I really don't like it when I hear fighters stop fighting because, pressures from other people. Because if you do that, you kind of resent, you leave with resentment and you never really kind of get over that. It's just, you got to do it on your own terms. That's it. BJ does it on anybody else's terms, he's not going to feel right about it.
Now, BJ obviously was the former lightweight king in the UFC. Now, the current lightweight king is one Conor McGregor, and you're a very, very accomplished former professional boxer, so I got to get your take. I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to say, but what do you think will happen if Conor and Floyd get in the ring and go toe-to-toe? Obviously, if it's an MMA match, Conor, I think murks him within the first minute. He takes him to the ground and ground and pounds him out,
right,
or submits him. But in a boxing match, I'm no dummy. I know Floyd's a big favorite here, but he is 40 years old and Conor is in his prime. Is there a chance that Conor, maybe uses his reach and lands that big left, or is Floyd just going to dance around him and just embarrass him?
Yeah. Let me tell you, this is the way I look at it. Floyd should be able to do whatever he wants with him, and if this fight goes by six rounds, that's an embarrassment for boxing. If it goes past six rounds, that will embarrass boxing. So, you know, even you know, it's just not the same sport. Like, you know, it isn't. And I've watched McGregor with his boxing and his sparring and stuff, and it's not even going to be. It's not even going to be close. It's going to be a great way for him to make money and for fans to be able to see it. But, you know, I just don't see it going beyond six rounds.
Yeah, I think regardless, and I think most people are going to agree with you there, I think regardless, everyone's going to buy the pay-per-view, and they're going to be very, very rich afterwards. So kudos to the both of them for promoting this. Marcus, you got any plans to come back to Maine anytime soon?
Well, I'm going to be, for sure, very short time, I'll be in Maine the, let's see, the 10th. I'll be in Portland for a wedding as our, you know, my old student Rachel Joyce is marrying my buddy Chris Harris. So I'll be there for the wedding, and then I have to come right back, and I have a SWAT thing that week where I'm training with the SWAT teams down here. And then working with Tim again. So, yeah, that'll be it. And then maybe towards the end of the summer, I'm going to try to shoot back up and make at least a couple of days up there.
Well, it'd be definitely great to see you, Mark. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show here. Travel safely to OKC when you head there with Tim, and Brian and myself will be cheering you guys on.
All right, Ryan. Thanks, man.
Well, it's summer coming right around the corner. It might be slow to start off here in this general area of the state of Maine, but it is coming in full force, and you know what that means? Cold beer, great food, and awesome music at the Bangor waterfront, too. And our friends at the Sea Dog Brewing Company are going to be helping you go to the concerts for absolutely free if you go down before on concert dates and you got a little lady luck on your side. Here's all you have to do. You go down there on a concert night, like, I don't know, say Rod Stewart. Maybe he's down there on the waterfront. I don't know, maybe you're more of a hard rock fan. You're going to be down there. Maybe you want to go see Korn one night. Well, you can go down to the Sea Dog on the event nights, and what you do, you go there, and an hour before the show, they will draw a winner to go and with their friend to see the concert for absolutely free thanks to the Sea Dog located at 26 Front Street in Bangor. Yeah, absolutely free. I went to a concert a little while ago. It was fun. It was absolute blast. A little cold for my liking, but it's going to be a lot warmer once this season really picks up in full force. And again, the back deck is open. You can enjoy the waterfront views. It's just going to be so much fun. And again, great menu items coming on there for the Sea Dog as well, including a chilled seafood sampler. Oh, it's making my mouth water. Wash it down with a delightful Blue Paw beer or anything else that strikes your fancy. And go check it out for yourself. And maybe, just maybe, if you're lucky, like Ryan and I are, you'll win some tickets courtesy to Sea Dog Brewing Company and the Brew Pub as well, located 26 Front Street. You can give them a call at 947-8009 or check them out on Facebook as well at Sea Dog Bangor or SeaDogBrewing.com.
And she didn't know how to tell him she was in love with a Rasta man.
On the phone now is Coach Stephen Wright, who trains athletes like UFC star Johnny Big Rig Hendricks at War Room MMA and Kickboxing in Fort Worth, Texas. And he just got back from Sweden, cornering Abdul El Hassan at UFC Fight Night 109. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for the music intro. It's pretty hot.
Yeah, it's not a bad taste there.
Yeah, something that's going to go right on my iPod after this is done.
There you go. Something to jam out to. Yeah. Now, Coach, you've been a very, very busy man lately. As I mentioned, you just got back to the States. You were over in Sweden cornering Abdul Al-Hassan in his fight against Omari Akhmedov. Again, that was at UFC Fight Night 109. Tell us about the experience of traveling over to Sweden, and although your guy didn't get the W, just talk about the fight and maybe what could have gone differently.
Oh, you know, the experience is just well, it was actually kind of rough from the start. You know, I got, basically, there's a law in Sweden that says you have to be 3 months out from the expiration of your passport. And my passport was good, but it expired on August 22nd, and we flew out on the 23rd. So by one day, they wouldn't let me go into the country of Sweden. So I literally had to like run around and you know, grace of God. The next day they were able to give me my passport in 2 hours, and then I flew out the next day. So then we get out there, and then Razak has this freak thing where he injures his thumb, so we're icing it, we're trying to get through it, and that kind of stuff. Just these sort of things. I mean, for people who aren't in the community, they happen all the time. It's these weird, you know, circumstances that you can't, you know, foresee. But you know, by fight night, you know, we felt good to go. You know, we got started slow, and Razak, you know, one of his strengths is more, you know, he's actually really, really talented, you know, good at takedowns and so on. But I just think that just the, you know, the hour difference, and then of course him not getting straight sleep. You know, he's Muslim, so like his prayer schedule, and it's not dark very long out there. So it's like he prays, goes to sleep 3 hours, and he's got to get up and, you know, pray again. And I think that those factors have probably affected him physically. But on fight night, for me, it's all about who executes. No matter what went on in your life, no matter what was going down, whoever executes is the winner. And Razak came out, and he was able to have some rounds where he landed his offense big, but our momentum was always killed by Amari kind of, you know, diving in on a takedown. And so credit due, and then back to the drawing board. You know what you did wrong. You know what you have to work on. And outside of that, you know, Sweden's a beautiful city. What people don't realize is it's a bunch of islands that are, like, connected together. So there's, like, 56 bridges that connect these islands, and that's pretty much what the city is. So it's as beautiful as it gets.
Wow, I'm sure that was an amazing experience to be over there. Maybe one day I'll be able to be fortunate enough to go over there and check it out. You know, talking about Abdul, though, I mean, this is his first loss as a pro. He still has a bright future ahead of him. What do you expect him to do when he bounces back and fights again, hopefully in the UFC here in the near future?
Sure. You know, the biggest thing is just it was important for us to go 15 minutes, you know, because even in his Muay Thai career, the longest he'd ever fought, there was a fight where I told him to fight slow and go into the second round. But if I tell him, you know, to just use your athleticism and explode, he usually wins really fast. And one thing that did hurt our development a little bit is in our area, the word was kind of out that he was like, you know, a guy who could stop you. So we couldn't get fights that could test us and take us into deep water. Ideally, what I like as a guy who grooms fighters, because that's what I do. I feel like I build fighters. I don't build records. So we want somebody who is UFC level before you get to the UFC. You want someone that gave you that test. And you might pass the test, you might fail the test, but you want to feel it. You don't want to feel that opposition for the first time once you get there. So we weren't able to get that. So once we got to the UFC, Amari gave us that. He was a tough guy who was around for three rounds. We hadn't fought 15 minutes before. We hadn't fought 2 minutes before, you know, so we were grateful for it. And now that he's gone the distance, it's no longer that thing that you're worried about, that fear, can I go the distance? You've done it. So now you just build on that success. And I'm excited for whoever they send us next. And I guess we're looking at August, September, you know, the next time they use us. So whether we get the Japan card or something, and I'm not sure what the August one's going to be, but we're looking for something.
Nice. Well, definitely can't wait to see him back in the cage. He's a very impressive physical specimen with an abundance of talent. So very much looking forward to see him competing again very, very soon. Yeah. Also, you had mentioned to me before that you've also been helping prep a 115-pound female for the Ultimate Fighter tryout. Can you tell us a little bit about who your lady is that you're helping get ready for this big opportunity and how it's been going?
Sure. I trained a fighter named Montana Stewart, and she's no more for her losses than her wins. She came out, we started rough because we took some fights, you know, above weight, at the girl's hometown, short notice, and she started off 0-2. And then we went back to the drawing board. She ran off 6 straight wins, and then she lost her last 2. They were step-up fights. She lost the fight to Dern with the submission, and then she lost the fight to Cynthia Cavia. No shame there. Cynthia is a really, really talented girl. But it was one of those things where it's like, as I said before, I like to feel the level before you get there. I would rather lose when there's 1,000 and 1,000 on the line than opposed to when you get to the UFC and there's like 10,000 and 10,000 on the line. Mm-hmm. So we went back to the drawing board. She's really, like I said before, she's a 115er, and we had a fight scheduled at 125 coming up here, which we still do on the 16th. But the tryout came, and I was like, hey, you know, you're talented enough. She's looked fantastic in the gym. Claudia Galdea, who's fighting tonight, she looked fantastic in the gym when she was working with Claudia a couple of years ago. Claudia did a seminar, and then we went up the day before to get some sparring and get some grappling in. So I believe she is the level of talent to really have a high success. It's just given, you know, she was only 21 years old when she went to those fights. So it's like is getting the combination of grooming yourself into a fighter, getting comfortable fighting in front of the lights. Everybody kind of goes through that differently. So I was excited that this opportunity came up, and next thing you know, she did good the first day. For those that don't know, basically you go to the Ultimate Fighter tryouts, they do pictures and they look at you. You hit mitts for like 1 minute, and then you grapple for like 2 minutes. So if you get dominated in the grappling, they usually kind of, you know, they're a little skeptical of you. But if you have the look, you have the story, it can drive you even if your skill set isn't where you'd like it to be. But she had the record. You know, she's fought, you know, 10 fights. And it really looked good for us. She did really well out there. So basically they've been giving the call back the last few weeks, telling who they're going to use, who they're not going to use. And, of course, I'm not supposed to say anything. But I do think it looks good for us.
That's great. And, of course, we're talking to Coach Stephen Wright of War Room MMA and Kickboxing. You can follow him on Twitter at Stephen the War Man. Now, Coach, I got to ask you, for any of our listeners that don't know enough about you here, tell us how you got your start in the world of combat sports.
Okay, I'll do my best not to make this the longest story of the world. But basically, I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And when we were kids, just like a lot of other kids, grew up big into Ninja Turtles, big into Power Rangers, big into, you know, Bloodsport, Van Damme, and so on. So when I first did it, I thought about martial arts just for, like, being on TV, you know, because that's what the opportunities were. I had friends who were really big into aggressive inline skating, and they'd always look for places in Minneapolis where they could skate and not get in trouble. And then one day they did it by a place called Minnesota Cali, which was a place that they didn't have fighters, but they did, like, Muay Thai as far as the technicos and hitting the pads and the workout part of it, but they didn't have it in terms of, like, you know, fighting. And yet, the first day we went there, we met a guy, and he was telling us that he got to go over to Japan for a fight and that kind of stuff because he'd been with them for a long time. So we thought it was really, really cool. We tried it out. 3 months later, all my friends quit, but I stayed with it. And then, you know, a couple of years later, I had been, you know, pursuing different things that I liked. I went up to L.A. for acting and just kind of did a lot of things. And one day, I got an ESPN magazine article, which I loved back then. And there was a guy, and he had a Minnesota Vikings jersey on. So I was like, oh, I'll read this guy's story. His name was Bob Sapp. And then it turns out he'd gone over to Japan and had the success and that kind of deal, whatever. And I barely paid attention to it. You know, I barely paid attention to it. And then you guys have YouTube now. But at the time, you know, 2001-ish, 2000, we didn't have anything like that. So we had, YouTube was getting started, but it wasn't what it is now. We had, like, Kaza Light and Mega Upload, stuff like that. That's how we got video. And one day, Bob Sapp's name came up, and we went looking for it and, got a couple videos. The first video, he, like, goons this guy, and he gets disqualified. The second video was Bob Sapp versus Miracle Krokop. Miracle Krokop, of course, he's moving around. He hits him with the body kick. Instead of throwing the body kick, he throws a straight left hand, and he drops him, and he busts, breaks his orbital bone. The moment Miracle Krokop landed that left hand, I wanted to be a kickboxer. I wanted to go to K-1. That was my dream. So I went all in throughout the years. I had a lot of good training opportunities. Got to live in Holland for a little bit. Look for opportunities in the States. Then I came to realize why there wasn't a lot of guys in the USA, from the USA in K-1, because we just didn't have the opportunities. You know, there were amateur fights here and there. Back in my day, people do inner squads, or it's kind of a thing where you, like, go to somebody's gym and you kind of compete there, or, like, they just smokers, unsanctioned fights, like, there were no commissions back then. Even in MMA, we didn't have commissions really all over the country in the early 2000s. So you just kind of did whatever you could to kind of build experience. And then the breakthrough for me as far as getting the fight was the guy in the state over was doing fights. His name was Duke Rufus. And Duke Rufus was, like, really, really huge for all of us in the area as far as getting opportunities to fight and training opportunities. So Duke, you know, first time I was there to Duke, we talked on the phone for an hour and a half, you know, because, like, he is, you know, he's a talker and he loves talking fights. And so got to go over, you know, train for him and our fight for him a couple times, and then got to go and be a training partner a couple times, which was really, really huge. Also at this time, I decided that, you know, all right, I'm going to focus on college, get college done, and so on. Played college football at a school called Augsburg. It's right next to the University of Minnesota. And the first day I got there, I met a kid who would go on a fight in the UFC, and his name was Roger Huerta. And when I met Roger, Roger was talking to me. He goes, hey, man, where do you train? He says, oh, if you want to, man, you should come train with me. I train with this guy named Dave Monet. And he goes, he, you know, used to be UFC champ. That guy said, you should come train with us. So I go out there, and I train with Dave, and that was the first time I was ever at a fight gym. So way back in 2003, 2004, you know, it freaks me out now because 2007.
Tell me about it.
Dave was the first fight trainer I ever had. So, sorry, I cut you off.
Oh, no, no, I was just saying, tell me about it. I don't need to be reminded about how old I am now, too, so I hear what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. So basically, that was that's how it got started. Dave was, you know, really the first guy to prep me for fights, first time I ever sparred. Travis used to always drive up like maybe 2-3 times a week from he's in, you know, southern Minnesota, and he would always drive up, and really that was the first time I was around a fight environment. That was the first time I was around athletes that competed. So I did that for a while, and then as I said, it opened up doors. I had one moment that really changed my whole life, my whole perspective as far as training. I went to Duke Rivers' gym to train for a couple of days, and that day I trained like 5 times. You know, I went at the time. Duke had an old boxing gym, beautiful gym. It was, you know, it was huge, and he had a room with like 3 rings in it, and he did like boxing classes and kickboxing. He did everything throughout the day. I got there, and I'm telling you, I must have did like 6 classes. And then later that night, Stephen Bonner had come in, and this is right after the show. Maybe he fought once or twice after the Ultimate Fighter, or the first Ultimate Fighter ended. I got there, and then they didn't have enough people for sparring. So I'm just like, get your stuff ready, get, you know. So I'm like, all right, you know, freaking out a little bit because Stefan's on TV. You know, I'm still just an amateur at the time. And so we were sparring, and then I would open up here and there, but mostly I was just losing the round because I didn't feel confident throwing. And the second round that I was going with him, I started to punch a little bit more, and then he was timing me going backwards. And then I leaned, and I thought I had room to lean out of the way. But what I did was I was, my back was to the rope, so I just leaned on the rope so I didn't go anywhere, and he caught me with a head kick. It was one of those things where you, like, go out and you come back on. And then, like, I went out, came back on, and I put my hands on the mat before I hit the ground. And then Duke was like, whoa, nice head kick setup, that kind of stuff, whatever. So then he pulled me out, and, you know, he's, like, sitting there, he's talking to me, and this is why Duke Rufus is, like, my guy to this day, you know, because of my own intentions. I'm sitting there, I'm upset because I didn't, I keep my hands up. I think, you know, I went to a couple rounds with, you know, Bonner, I could just start bragging about it, you know, and say I'm getting better. But in truth, I didn't do anything, and I got kicked in the head. And he encouraged me to get myself back in there. And I wouldn't have done it if I had my own accord because I was just upset. You know, I was upset I didn't go that way. So I get back in there, and we're working. We get to the clinch, and I realize, you know, I feel stronger than this guy in the clinch. I could tie dump him. And then I was like, but he just, you know, he's Stephen Bonner. You can't do that kind of deal. I was like, no. Just kick me in the head. I'm going to tie dump him. So I got into a good body lock, and then I threw him on the ground and just knocked the wind out of him for a moment. And the Duke was like, whoa, great job, Steven. And from that moment on, I was no longer afraid of anybody with a name. So it really, really helped me a lot when I moved to Holland. So whoever the best guy in the room was, I wanted to go against them, win, lose, or draw. It just changed my whole mentality. And then lo and behold, a weird set of circumstances, come back to the States. I'm looking for fights. I'm calling Duke all the time. MMA explodes at this time. Nobody wanted to do Muay Thai. MMA was way more money, way less damage. And I was so I hit up Duke, like, hey, you got something going on? He's like, yeah, I'm sorry, man. This fight fell through, that kind of deal, whatever. And then I went to the barbershop, and I'm a very Christian guy. So I was looking to share my faith with this guy, you know, at the barbershop. And then he goes, yeah, man, I trained at this gym in South Cali. I was hoping to get the pad work, that kind of deal. I go, you know what? I used to train with them back in the day. If you want to, I've got some pads I can help you out. His name is Robert Dawson. And then after I showed him this thing, he says, hey, man, you really know how to kick. You really understand this game. He became my first fighter that I ever worked with. And then he connected me to a gym. And at that gym is where I met who would be my first champion, a Muay Thai fighter named Cooley. Cooley's definitely in my heart forever. This guy, you know, bought in, to my system. And we really got our combination flow going really early. And then also who was there was Abdul Al-Hassan. So I got him, like, right in the beginning. He had never really thrown a punch. He thought kickboxing was crazy. So, but that's where it happened. And then in 2 years, you know, we were, like, I want to say, like, 38-5 as a team in kickboxing. Like, we always win. We'd show up with, like, 5 fighters, and we'd leave with 5 wins. Like we were really, really talented. And I guess I got my intro into the big time, I guess, if you will, as far as bigger names, through a fighter named Mo LaWall. He was in Holland when I went out there one time. And then it was me, him, and Tyrone Spong, and we were all working. I was filming this kickboxing documentary called Chin on Chin at the time. And then Tyrone, as a joke, he held the low kick pad at me. And I had my jeans on at the time, so I kicked it once and said, hold on, I have my Muay Thai shorts underneath that make me laughing. So then I started going to work, like a really, really kick. And then after I was done with it, like every time I would do something, Tyrone would say, this guy's got it. This guy's got it. You know, whether it was punching, kicking, knees, elbows, whatever, he goes, this guy's got it. So Mo was just kind of blown away because he'd never known anybody from the States that knew kickboxing like I do. To this day, I have a kickboxing podcast. And I went out there, filmed the documentary. I trained with those guys. And then afterwards, Mo was like, when we go back to the States, you're going to be my guy. We come back to America, and I lose my job like a lot of other Americans were at the time. I was a general manager at a movie theater. And I was like, okay, I don't want to wear a suit and tie anymore. I want to try to go into this bull. At the time, every weekend, Mo Lawal would message me. He goes, what are you seeing? What are you seeing? What are you seeing in this fight? And I'd break down the fight. He goes, you're the truth. You're the truth. I was like, all right, man. You know, I appreciate it. And he goes, I want you to come out and help me for this fight with this guy named Hodger Gracie. So, you know, I look up Hodger Gracie and break him down on film because I'm a big film junkie. And then he goes, the fight got postponed, but I'll hit you up later. I've been talking to Mark Lehman about you. Basically, when his fight got postponed, Team Takedown asked him to come down and do some work with them because they all went to OSU. And after 2 weeks were up, Mark Lehman was like, man, we really need a striking coach. We left Vegas. We haven't found one that we liked. We haven't found one that was able to commit to coming down here. Is there anybody that you know? And then Mo was like, there's my guy, Steven, in Minneapolis. And we came down. I kind of did like a one-week tryout. And the first fight camp I did with them was Johnny Hendrickson versus Mike Pierce in August 6th of 2011. And it's the role with me and Johnny, and that team kind of went from there.
Wow, and clearly things are going great for you now. Did you always know that you kind of had a knack for coaching and helping others? It just seems like you're able to build relationships rather easily. Did you always feel like that you'd eventually transition into coaching?
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I did and still do think that I would have been, you know, a really good world-class kickboxer. Like, that was still like my goal. That was really what the reason why I put the time in. I always thought that I'd be on the other side of it. I kind of thought that I'd be kind of like how Remy Bonjowski is now, a guy who had the good K-1 career who then segued into the good business career. Remy's got two gyms. He gets these speaking arrangements all the time. He gets these seminars. Remy Bonjowski is one of the few fighters that have done it right. Like, he can come back and fight if he wants to, if opportunity comes. But for the most part, he didn't take a lot of bad shots. Our defense was good, and his mind for business and the people he got around him was good. I really thought that if it was going to happen, it was going to happen that way. But here I am, 28 years old, and then, you know, I just kind of started, you know, training one guy, and I realized that when I explain things to people, they, you know, get a good understanding of it because I over-explain. Like, I'll say this, and then I'll give an example for it, and then I'll give an example for the example. And I'm not trying to do it, but that's just the way it comes off. And then also, as far as the film thing goes, you know, I was just a guy who I watch fights all the time. As I said before, I do the War Man Kick Fighting podcast show. I've been doing it for about 7-8 years now. And I would just get up and break stuff down and watch stuff. And there was a guy who was really important in my development named Brian Campbell. He's a guy who did Muay Thai in Minnesota. And he took me to watch film. And he would always break the film down and how the impact would happen. And then I press pause here and look at his body. Look how turned in his hips are and so on. He broke film down like that. But when I was watching the film, I go, now, how did he land a kick? Why did he land a kick? You know, like, that was my biggest thing. How is offense scored? So right now, one of my bigger philosophies is, above all else, I want to teach you how to hit people. You know, not necessarily just to throw the technique. It's very important to me that you understand why jab, jab, cross works, why hook, low kicks works, why cross, hook, cross works. Like, I want you to understand, these aren't just to be hitting on the pads. This is how this affects someone's defense. So I had a lot of different things that happened in my development, the time that Dave Manet stuck with me, because originally when I first started doing it, you know, Dave focused so much on the ground. Like, he used to just hit mitts for like an hour, and then we would do grappling teaching for like an hour, and then we'd roll for like an hour. That used to be class back in the day. And so I actually started off with like elements of doing the ground, and for people who were doing it as much as I was pretty good on the ground, but I still wanted to kickbox it. You know, that's still where my heart is. So to this day, when you hear me in the corner, you're like, man, this guy understands the ground. Plus, it helps to have what would be 5 years of, you know, interning under Mark Lehman. Helps you understand the ground a lot, too. So I feel a lot really, really comfortable with the calls. And I look back on it and I go, you know what? There were things set up for me to have success as a coach. between coaches that put time into me and coaches who didn't put time into me. I learned a lot from the guys who didn't give me as much work, guys who kind of gave an arrogant, you know, appeal to me, towards me. I learned a lot from those guys too, you know. So I was like, all right, I know how I want to be as a coach. I know what I don't want to be as a coach. And it just kind of came together. But if I could, I would have Remy Majowski's career.
Yeah, well, regardless, things are going well for you, sir. And, you know, as you mentioned here, you've been working with Johnny Hendricks for a while now. Just before we had you on, we had his next opponent, Tim Boach's head coach, Marcus Davis, join the show, and he talked about the fight a little bit. You said you're a film junkie, and I'm sure you've seen Tim Boach plenty of times. I'm curious if you could just break that fight down a little bit for us and what you expect to see on June 25th.
Well, you know, it should be said that Tim is the first legit 185er that we fought. Not nothing against Lombard, of course, who had that really long run of KOs. And you know, he was a violent dude when he was in Bellator. You know, shout out to Lombard. But Lombard can make 170 and Boach can't make 170. You know, so we know that this is the first legit 185 good-sized guy that we're going to compete against. You know, we understand that he's a powerful dude. And, of course, he probably wants to win in the wrestling and win in the cage work, and we want to win in space. I mean, that's just anybody who knows anything about fighting. You wouldn't have to look long before you realize this is probably what this guy's going to do, and this is probably what this guy's going to do. So you don't have to break down intricate game plans of what we're going to try to do as far as get to those spots. That's kind of the breakdown that we do in film. But Johnny's been spending a lot of time getting himself stronger, you know, definitely listening a lot more. And then at the same time, of course, the goal is to preserve the quickness because he's always moved really, really well, and he's always had really good offensive output. You know, if you look at fights with a fight with George and a fight with Bobby, we're throwing. You know what I'm saying? We're not, you know, we're throwing combinations. That's how we've always done it. We'll score single shots here and there. If the guy's, you know, throwing huge hulking shots, of course, we'll find our moment. But that's pretty much what, you know, I've got going down as far as my preparation for, you know, what we're thinking that's going to happen in the fight. And that's actually a super busy weekend with me because I'll be at the Bellator in New York the day before that. So it's really cool that we get this opportunity, and I think it's the one that's going to let us know how our experience in the weight class is going to be the most. Now, again, Boach has got a different frame and body than a lot of the other guys, but when the fight was offered to us, it was really offered to us like a day after we had beat Lombard. So we're excited for it, and we know that Boach, he's coming off of a little bit of a losing slide, so I know he's excited for it, too. I'm sure he's like, okay, I get a hold of this guy, you know, maybe my strength can show up. But, you know, we want to try to, you know, show him that we are the level of athlete to get out of it, the difficult spot and then make the fight our fight, which is really what MMA is about. It's about dictating style.
Now, you mentioned that this is going to be the first legitimate 185er that Johnny faced. What went behind the reason for Johnny to jump weight classes and go up from 170 to 185? Was that cut to make welterweight just a little too difficult for him?
Sure. You know, the thing that I would explain to people that they're not as familiar with, people assume that if you struggle with the weight class, that you always struggle with it. And finally, you made a decision to fight above. And that wasn't the case. We had some really easy 170 cuts. When we were with Dolce, when we were with every nutritionist that we've ever, you know, worked with, those guys know their stuff. So these guys, you know, all of them who have put the time into it, they know how to get your weight down effectively. Like, they know how to do it. When we were with Dolce, he knew how to do it. Johnny responded to him really, really well. I'm not saying that we can have a rough cut here and there, but for the most part, it wasn't difficult to do. And then as Johnny entered 31, 32, 33, something changed, you know, and it's just, we got older, and when you got older, your body responds differently. And then all of a sudden we realized his body really starts to fight and shut down around that 174 mark. So we're really just kind of working really hard for the last 3 pounds, for the last 4 pounds. It just kind of happened overnight, you know, like it was fine. We were okay. And then we had what I'd say is our best cut was the Matt Brown cut. Really dedicated, you know, between Johnny and his wife. They sat down, they meal prepped. They were really, really dedicated. He was ripped up for that fight, went out there, performed great. But that was it. That was the end of us having this weight cut not be too bad. After that, you know, of course, we had the one where, you know, things didn't work out for us in Houston. And then we came back, I want to say, what was our first fight? right after that. Having a mental lapse here.
Oh, no worries.
After things didn't work out in Houston, he had the long gap. That's when the team takedown kind of turmoil started to come into play. But our year when we went against Wonder Boy, when we went against, whose name am I forgetting? I'm forgetting somebody's name. Wonder Boy, Gastelum, and then
Magni.
And all of those, even though we made weight for Wonder Boy, it was a little bit tough. It was tough as far as what happened to him physically. Wonder Boy was actually a really easy cut. And, you know, we actually made it early. We were 169 the day before. But what it took from him, like physically, you know, what it took from him as an athlete showed up. And then, you know, same thing for Gastelum. Gastelum, we, you know, I guess the just one guy decided that we were like point something, something, something over, and that's how we didn't make weight there. And then the one for Magni, and I was like, hey, he put in a lot of work to make weight for Magni. And I just like, his body has said, no, it's not about, a lot of people think, you know, it's unspecialism or not eating or you're not, you're just not taking care of that, yada, yada. That stuff comes into play, and I'm not saying that Johnny doesn't get big, but I will say that I've seen the work that we've put in to have very, very easy cuts, and he put in the most work for that Magni cut in that fight week, and it just didn't come off. The body just said no. 173 just said no. So after that, I was like, all right, man, you know, it's time for us to just go ahead and you know, move up, look for a guy. Luckily for us, McMaynard called me like maybe the day after the, you know, the Magni fight, maybe 2 days, and he asked if we wanted to fight on the Brooklyn card. And I was like, yeah, you know, it would be interesting. He said, well, who would you want to fight? And I mentioned Marquardt and I mentioned Lombard. And then we couldn't do Brooklyn because it was too close. Like the New York commission is the roughest right now. So we couldn't do that. That was too close. And then they just did it the following week in Halifax. So that was our first go, 185, and I'm telling you, to be in the you know, the sauna and the hot tub, to be with Johnny mentally, to see him have energy and smile and be excited because he knows this is going to be easier this time. I'm not going to have to deplete myself. I'm not going to see myself get weak. You see, it may not look like it. I don't look the part getting off the bus. You know, I may not be, you know, ripped up, you know, but I'll be able to be at a functional way where I can compete for 15 minutes. And he went out there and he had a really good performance that night. I'd say a solid performance for him. Not really good, but solid. So we're looking forward to getting back in there with Boach, and we're happy to do it knowing that we didn't, you know, kill ourselves on the scale.
You know, one of the things that makes this fight so exciting for the hardcore fans and also for the casual fans, for that matter, is the fact that both of these guys have huge knockout power. So it makes for a really enticing matchup here. Now, if all things equal here and they get into just a straight-up dogfight on the feet, who do you think wins that? Do you think that Boach, being the bigger man, would have a little bit more of an edge there? Or do you think John would maybe want to get it to the feet if that happened? I'm just curious your thoughts on their striking styles if it ends up just on the feet in a slugfest.
You know, it's weird. There really isn't a lot of moments where people are, you know, biting down in their mouthpiece and just kind of throwing at Boach. And there's not a lot of moments where people are biting down in their mouthpiece and just kind of throwing at Johnny. I really don't think those type of exchanges will happen too much, but I do think that Boach will probably feel really, really strong if he can get himself into a dirty boxing position, because he does have the height over Johnny. Johnny's 5'9", and if he can get himself where he get that one big claw trapped under Johnny, I know that he was going to let a lot of power go, similar to what happened to him in Okami. You know, we aren't really the style of guy to bite, you know, to start brawling in spots. It's never been how Johnny is. He might have a moment here or there where he feels like you're playing earmuffs too much and he'll let the hands go. But as far as just a wild exchange, we're not going to play that game with anybody. We're not trained to play that game with anybody. But he can see really well, and Johnny can punch with you. So if you throw a 1-2 or if you throw a 3-2, he will find where your opening is. He'll let your 3 go by and he'll counter, or he'll go between your 1-2, or he'll go after your 1-2. He understands how to play that game. So I feel like we'll probably still be more tactical there. Whereas Boach, he's not really a guy who kind of sets up offense in terms of hiding behind a jab and so on. He's a guy who gets to spots where he's strong and he throws with violence. So once he gets to those places, he's trouble. So we're going to do our best to make sure that he doesn't have that comfort, that he doesn't feel he can land, you know, 3s and 4s. We want him to think that it's only 1s. And we want to go ahead and build on our offense ahead of his.
Now, what does a win or a loss do for Johnny's career at this point at 185 moving forward?
You know, when Nick called, Nick was like, hey, let's get him a guy who's, you know, been in the top 10 before, and let's see where that goes. You know, like, let's see, we get that win, maybe all of a sudden, you know, the next time we fight, we start to see, you know, Gianna Hendricks 185, like number 15 or 14 or something like that. Ideally, he wanted us to go against a guy who, let's see if it gets us moving in this direction, you know, because Gastelum's a shorter guy too. He's having some success in the division. So we are not sure what it means for after what a victory does. All it means is, you know, of course, you know, more home to take care, or more money to take care of the family. That's the most important thing as far as that goes. As a coach, and as you know, all fighters are you got to be optimistic in this game. We don't really go into it thinking about the loss. If we lose, we're just going to look for another bout as soon as we can at 185 and get back on the horse. Now that he doesn't have to rip his body and have to get down to, you know, 170, let's go ahead and focus on the next opposition and look for a guy who is competed around the same time as us and see if we can get back in there right away. If something comes up in August or something comes up in September. Ideally, we think, you know, this one is at the end of June, so our next chance of getting back in there would probably be September. So that's kind of where his mind is. That's where our mind is on there. Win or lose, we're hoping to come back around the September, October period of time. And hopefully, you know, it all works out. We're healthy. We get that W. We go into that fight, and then that would be pretty close. Well, I think we'll have to be in renegotiations at that point as far as Gianni's contract goes. I know that's coming up here pretty quick. But that's the goal, you know. If you lose, get right back at it. Look for somebody right away if you're healthy. You know, that's what we did after Magny. We were able to find a fight pretty much 6 weeks after Magny. So now, same boat. If we, you know, lose, if we're healthy, we'll look to compete again as soon as we can. If, you know, we win, God willing, you know, we're healthy. You know, that's really the only thing I pray consciously, just that both athletes are healthy. I want the skill to determine the fighter. If a guy's more skilled than us and they execute better, kudos to them. But if we're healthy, we get that victory. We'll see what the names are of guys who've won. You know, if like I believe the gentleman's name is Kelly from Australia. If he like wins at the same time, I think they're fighting pretty close to each other. Maybe we ask for that fight. You know, we're going to look for someone who's competing around the same time with us, and then we'll see what they're doing in September and October.
I've been patrolling around your Twitter. I had to ask some of these questions before we did let you go eventually here. First and foremost, I saw you were watching the Spelling Bee, so my question was,
yes.
Could you have spelled Merrickane?
No.
Okay.
As soon as we get to the Spelling Bee, the reason why I marvel at it is because when the kids ask the questions, you know, could you use it in a sentence and all this other kind of stuff, whatever, I think it's really what most people don't know is they're trained to go through a process. Like, the kids usually know the words right away, but it's just like a person who goes through lifting. It's like a person who, like, goes through, you know, whatever thing. I think track running is, like, the best example. There's a system of ways that they do things every single time before they compete. So the kids, they don't need that. They actually know already. So that's part of the part that I like. But I like that they go through the process of this is how you work it out, because no clue – nothing using in a sentence, nothing, none of that helps the kids. They got to know the word or they don't at that point.
Right.
So, like, when I watched the Spelling Bee, which I don't know why I fell in love with it. I'm just the biggest nerd ever. But I watched these kids, different ages. It's one of the first things that let me know homeschool has a big advantage over any type of school. But when I watched them work words out and spell them out, I go, you can't sound it out. You had to know the word. There's no way you could sound it out. That doesn't sound anything. So I look at these words and I go, yeah, I would have failed miserably. And I think that's why I marvel at it.
Yeah, same here. I was better at geography than spelling. But speaking of nerd, I am a big wrestling fan. I noticed that you are also a huge wrestling fan. So I always have to ask this
that
to Gage.
I am.
Who's your favorite wrestler, whether it be WWE or beyond that right now?
Okay, so right now I'm all about Marty Scurll.
Oh,
so
same here.
Outside of it, the villain Marty Scurll, I think he's got, for me, I think it's one of the things that I'm loving about the new WWE in the new wrestling landscape is people are figuring out their character and having success with it and then going into the big league. And I think before, the goal was to just be this empty palette, and then you just show the wrestling skill, and then if you look the part, they'll bring you in, you know, and then they'll figure out who you're going to be. So John Cena, the prototype, is way different than John Cena, who we know in the WWE. But the guy who he was in the beginning, the prototype, you can do anything you want to that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just, it's just a guy who had this, like, you know, okay gimmick. He goes to WWE, he picks up this, you know, kind of rap hip-hop gimmick, and he kind of picks it up, and he's able to do something with it. Bray Wyatt used to be, Husky Harris. So then he figures out, you know, the thing with Bray Wyatt, and now the crowd says what for pretty much any, you know, heel that's speaking, except for when Bray Wyatt talks. Nobody says anything when Bray Wyatt talks. So I love that the WWE has that development center, but I love more that you've got guys like Samoa Joe, who's just been Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, who's just been AJ Styles, guys who figured out who they're going to be before they got to the biggest league. So outside of it, I like Marty Scurll, the villain, because I think that he does the best job of just being this, you know, original. I mean, he's not big at all. He's 180 pounds. But, like, he figured out a gimmick that worked for him, something that nobody else is doing, comes out with the umbrella. The thing with the Bullet Club and Adam Cole this past couple weeks was just awesome. So, like, I really, really like what he's done. And then as far as in the WWE, the guys who I feel are must-see wrestling all the time, AJ Styles, of course, is the man. You know, AJ is just, you know, he's a phenomenal performer. I like him. I like Kevin Owens. Those are the two guys that I'm for sure watching. I'm not as high on, and I know people are, but I'm not that high on Finn Balor. Outside of his entrance, I just think he's okay, just personally for me as a guy who watches wrestling. But I like Wyatt, both talking and wrestling. I like AJ Styles, and I like Owens. Those are, like, my guys right now.
Well, perfect answer. I'm actually going to see Marty Scurll in a couple weeks in a pay-per-view for Ring of Honor down in Lowell, Massachusetts, and I'm wearing a Bullet Club sweatshirt right now. So, perfect answer, which goes in finally in this
man,
last
that's
one.
That's so cool. He's the man.
I think I know my answer to this right now after that last answer, but Stephen Wright, the pitcher for the Boston Red Sox, Stephen Wright, the comedian, and you, the other Stephen Wright, how would you rank them in order of most important?
Okay, so first of all, I've got to be number one, all right?
Consensus in my eyes after this last response for that wrestling thing there, so.
Yeah, well, no, it's funny because I laugh at that because when I was younger, I was in the second grade, our teacher was new. She was a first-year full-time teacher, I'll never forget it, and she comes in, and then she gets to my name, and it goes, Stephen Wright, like the comedian. And, of course, I'm like 7 years old, so I'm like, who? You know? like, I have no idea who she's talking about. It was actually the fourth grade, I want to say. But, like, I had no idea who she was talking about. And then later, of course, movies like Half-Baked and stuff like that. And then when I got older, I realized, who he was. But anytime anybody said my name, they said Stephen Wright, the comedian. So I actually probably, if I had to be honest, he's in the lead as far as the Stephen Wrights go. The pitcher, Stephen Wright, is a solid pitcher, but not an awesome pitcher, but he's still solid. But those guys have millions, and I don't. So definitely credit to them.
All right, yeah.
But as far as life experience, I think my life experience is right up there with anybody.
Yep, you're the number one Stephen Wright in the Main Event podcast's eyes, and maybe the pitcher second. I mean, yeah, well, we're in New England, so.
That is true. But the biggest thing here is that if all three Stephen Wrights stepped into a gladiator-type environment and only one could come out, it's going to be you. And really, that's what matters
that's right.
when it's all said and done.
That's right. I'm going after the pitcher first because I'm not even worried about comedian.
Well, Coach, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Best of luck on the 25th when you accompany Johnny to Oklahoma City for that big fight with Boach. And if you're going to be in New York City the day before, you might run into us because there's a good chance we're going to be down there covering that Bellator event as well. So let's try and connect and say hello if we're both down there.
For sure. I'll be there for sure. Alex Yeager fights Heather Hardy. So I'll be there for sure. I look forward to it. I got a super busy month coming up. And then I've got Mark Del Rosa's in Mexico City for Combat Americas after that. And then Jenny Fry is looking like she's going to be in the 15th of July. So it just bang, 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 bang. Wow. That's just kind of how the life is.
Well, hopefully you get a chance to take a break and relax for a little bit at some point down the line. But things are going great for you, and we're very pleased to have you on. And thank you for taking the time joining us today.
For sure. God bless all. Thank you for having me.
This is Ryan Jarrell from The Main Event. We are proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. The Sea Dog is located in Bangor at 26 Front Street, right next to the Penobscot River. You can call them at 947-8009 or visit them at seadogbrewing.com. Very excited to announce that the Sea Dog has a new summer menu. There are so many great things on this menu that are so just unbelievably mouthwatering. I could go through this whole thing, but I'm just going to give you a couple, just to give you a little taste, just to give you a little tease here. One of the new items, the ahi tuna poke. Raw sashimi tuna with avocado dressed in Hawaiian-style soy sesame citrus sauce, served with crispy wonton chips and garnished with wakame seaweed salad and tobiko fish roe. Wow, I feel like I'm in Hawaii right now getting ready to dip my toes into the ocean and eat some unbelievable food. Also, if you want a little bit more of a Maine type of style, they have the lobster mac and cheese, a broiled top brown skillet of orchetta pasta, cheddar mac and cheese sauce, and fresh picked lobster meat. And if you wanted to, there is a double order available. Good Lord. One of my favorites is the fried calamari. Same preparation, but now served in only one size only, a 6-ounce portion. God, I love calamari. I can't wait to get there this summer and eat some of that. And also, the Sea Dog's beers are always on tap. Unbelievable. The Blue Paw, my favorite. Brian's favorite. So many great things to do in one fantastic place. On 26 Front Street, the Sea Dog Brewing Company.
Another great show, wrapping up here in just a little bit. Again, as we look forward to that fight night card with the co-main event of Johnny Big Rig Hendricks and also Tim the Barbarian Boach. And it's good to find a little insight, too, from their coaches in the lead-up to this fight.
Oh, yeah. Always great to talk to Marcus and Stephen Wright. What a pleasure. Really interesting seeing the other side of things from the coaches and hearing what they have to say versus the guys that step in there and throw down in front of thousands upon people and sort of a...
They throw down on thousands of people?
In front of...
Well, he is a barbarian.
Yeah, that's right. In front of thousands of people. Isn't that what I said?
No, you missed a word or so. Okay, it's all right. It happens to me every single day.
I'm only a quarter of the way through my coffee, and it's going down slow today. So I don't.
You're
know
only
you.
Human, Ryan.
I know. You know. That's. You know. There's a song that we're gonna have to do for one of these outros.
Yeah, what's that?
It's called something about being human. Hold on a second. I'll tell you right now. I heard it the other day, and I was like, "Wow, that's really good." Yeah, My Name Is Human by Highly Suspect, and it's a pretty good song. I think you might like it.
Okay, I'll check it out sometime. My Name Is Human. Okay, I'll check that one out. I swear to you, I promise you, I will check that. Whoa, those guys look weird.
Right. Well, I don't know what they look like. I couldn't pick them out of a lineup.
Like a blonde-haired dude, I guess. I'm not quite sure. Is this the song?
I think
starts
so.
Off yeah. weird. Starts yeah. off weird. Maybe I'll yeah. maybe I'll play a little bit more of it.
Yeah, this is it.
Okay, it's not bad. It's not bad.
Well, you only
I'll
heard
check
just
it
a
out.
Little bit of
I,
it.
No. I just see some swear words, and I do not want to have to bleep these post-production, so I'm going to pull out. Going to pull out, because that's the best route to go. A little protection here from the swearing. It's better to pull out than
really
not at
all. It's really better to pull out, because you never know what could happen if you don't.
If you don't pull out, sometimes there's an issue. And if I didn't pull out in this situation, what could have happened is we could have had a swear word explosion, and... I don't know. Maybe people's ears would have gotten harassed.
We could have very upset sponsors in the
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we don't want to do that. So I'm just going to pull that out so I don't have to delete this whole segment. Yeah. We can leave this in here because the show is raw, and that's why we pull out.
Let's digress. We got a pretty exciting little interesting segment here that we want to do. You want to set it up, Brian?
I'm going to set it up because you know what time it is? It's time for us to choose our pound-for-pound best UFC champions.
Boom. Love it.
We're talking male, female, all the champions. There are 10 in total, soon to be 11 whenever they decide to add the featherweight title for the women's ranks. And we are going to pick our favorite top 10 pound-for-pound fighters, and then we're going to compare and contrast, and it's going to be a lively discussion, but a fun one, I think.
Okay.
So
why don't we do this? Why don't we do 10 through 6?
That's what I was going to say. I think we should start off. Let's just do dueling 10s. We'll go 10 and 10, 9 and 9, 8 and 8.
Well, my number 10.
Okay.
All right.
Let's hear it.
I'm starting with the individual who I believe...
this is the weakest champion.
That is correct.
Okay.
And I believe when he fights next, he will lose the belt, regardless of the opponent. And that is one Michael the Count Bisping in the 10th spot.
Man, I hate to disagree with you this early, so I'm not going to. Michael Bisping is my number 10, too. The fact that he won the title in the first place was a shock to so many people. And who did he defend it against? Dan Henderson, who probably, I love him to death, but I don't think he deserved a title shot at that point in time. Did you think Dan Henderson really deserved a title shot, other than the fact that it was going to be his final fight for the UFC and in MMA?
No, I didn't think so either. So we're both on board there.
Total agreement.
My number 9 is going to be Cody Garbrandt.
Okay, so I'm slightly different from you on that one. My number 9 is Tyrone Woodley. And it's not because I don't like him and I don't think he's a good champion. It's because when he finally got the belt, that last fight against Wonder Boy was an abomination to MMA. It was just such a tentative. He didn't look like a champion in my eyes. He did not look like a champion in my eyes. And that's why I put him in number 9, because I still think in his next fight, if he goes out there, I think he could lose the next one, and it could be a pretty short reign for him.
Potentially. But, you know, when you got two high-level athletes like Woodley and Wonderboy going at it, sometimes they can really put, a stoppage to one another's offense by just how good they are. So.
And I don't know that he didn't lose his title.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Exactly.
My number 9 is Cody. Your number 9
is Woodley.
Is Woodley.
Yep.
At 8, I have... Amanda Nunes.
Okay, this is where we're going to differ a little bit, because I like Amanda a little bit higher up, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. This is where I had Cody Garbrandt.
Garbrandt, okay.
I had Garbrandt here. This is where I think he slots out pretty nicely. Mm-hmm. Again, I give him a little bit of love just because the way he dominated Dom Cruz, who had been the long, long, long time champion at 135, and had he still held the belt, he'd be pretty high up on my list right now.
Understood. Yeah, it's funny how we view things here, because in the number 7 spot for me, I have Woodley, and mm-hmm. and again, I agree with what you're saying about that last fight against Wonderboy and everything, but I think about how he won the belt and how he destroyed a guy in Robbie Lawler, who everyone was just getting pummeled by for the last year or so before that when he was the champ. So number 7 for me is Woodley. Who's your 7?
I'm actually going to be a little bit of a differing opinion on yours here, because I'm going to put, and this might be sacrilegious to say for some, but I'm going to put the winner, and again, we're going to be completely straight up on this one. We don't know who won the UFC 212 finals, because we taped this before, a couple hours before. So I'm going to put Aldo Holloway in this one, just kind of hedging my bets, because I think Max is going to win the title. If he doesn't and it's Aldo, then I might have moved him up a slight bit. But I'm just going to put him at that 7th spot, because even if Aldo does win that, I feel confident in saying that one, because that knockout to Conor McGregor really dropped him down a huge amount of pegs in my book.
And I agree with you. That's why I have the winner that in the number 6 spot.
Okay, so we're not really that much different right now. Not that much different. I like that. Is there a reason why you had him in that 6? Is it just because of that kind of mentality?
Yeah, I think it's just I just have him there just because the people that I have ahead of them I just think are more suited to be higher in the pound-for-pound rankings for me. That's basically it.
All right. I like that. That's perfectly fair. My number 6, though, I'm going to put Stipe.
Stipe, whoa.
I had to do it, though.
I didn't expect that.
Stipe I put there because I love him to death, but heavyweight is such a volatile division, and I could see him losing any fight that he goes out there. He has looked great. He handled Junior his last time out. He took the title away from Verdum. He knocked out and finished
Alistair
Overeem.
That's exactly why I have Stipe a little higher.
But, I know. I love Stipe, but I had to put him a little bit below my number 5 through 1, just because I still feel like Stipe might be playing on borrowed time. I hope and pray that it's not the case, and if we did this after his next fight, I'd probably shoot him up maybe to the top 3. But right now, I'm holding him at number 6.
All right, well, fair enough. My five is going to be one DC, Daniel Cormier, the light heavyweight champion of the world. And obviously, depending on what he does against John Jones, that will change things drastically.
I'm going to have to wait for my DC, but this is where I slot Amanda Nunes in.
Oh, okay.
What she's done with the women's division there, taking down Ronda and absolutely just demolishing her. You're talking about possibly the greatest pound-for-pound women's champion at the height of her game.
Yeah.
Right? Because she came around a little bit before Joanna was doing all the things that she was doing.
Boy, she sure dropped, though.
Exactly. Yeah. But she just looked at Ronda and made her look like she was a like amateur. A middle school kid against a college kid in an athletic sport. So that's why that's the lasting image I have of her. Plus, she demolished Misha.
Yeah.
She beat Valentina Shevchenko. Yeah. She just ran through it. She's on a five-fight winning streak, and I don't think anyone can even just take her down. I'm not even sure Shevchenko's going to have a chance here.
I love the lioness. I think that she's awesome. She'll, you know, I just want to see, I guess, a couple more wins against different stylistic matchups before I shoot her a little higher up. But again, these champions are champs for a reason.
Right.
You know, it's tough to you know, distinguish who's better, you know, so you got the best of the best here.
And what's not to say if maybe not Michael Bisping. Let's say Cody Garbrandt rattled off like three straight wins in impressive fashion, just cleaning out 135. We wouldn't jump him way up the list. Yeah. So,
number four for me, I got the guy from Cleveland.
Stipe
Miocic at number four.
I love myself some Stipe, and I debated doing that there, but it's so hard in the middle ones that you can't really slot them. I just couldn't slot them in different spots, but I mean, Stipe makes sense, and if he wins another time, we could be talking about one of the greatest heavyweight champions of all time.
Look, you knock out Junior Dos Santos, that's something that no one does, but Stipe did it. So there's nothing else you can really say. To me, right now, I just want to see Stipe beat Kane, and once he beats Kane, cemented, greatest heavyweight of all time. Forget about it. To me, it's a no-brainer. He's already beaten all the other guys that you'd think that, wow, geez, well, this is a different stylistic matchup, got by him. This is a different, you know, guy here, got by him. And he does it all in emphatic fashion. So I want to see him against Kane. He beats Kane and then gets by Fabricio again. He's the greatest heavyweight of all time for me.
Yep. Will he be able to do that? It's the question.
I think he will.
I'm not quite sure Verdum wouldn't take him down the next time he fights.
Because
he seems like a different guy. And again, we'll see when he finally steps into the cage again against Overeem. And if he takes care of Overeem, then I think he's deserved a title shot there, too. But I'm looking at this heavyweight division, and I'm not seeing a ton of guys who could even challenge Stipe, but you never know. That's why they fight out there.
Yeah,
that's why they do.
True.
All right, my number four, first time on the list, we've heard him, Conor McGregor.
Woo! Number four!
Number four.
Wow.
I'm going to put Conor there. The fact that Brock Lesnar has more title defenses than Conor McGregor, I know he's a two-time champion. I know he took the title away from Aldo in impressive fashion. I know he made Eddie Alvarez look like a little punk in there in the ring, in the cage, rather. But still, I need to see Conor go out there and do it a little bit more. Plus, Nate Diaz showed the game plan on how to beat him. Sure, you have to be able to take Conor's punches, and you have to tire him out in one round and not get knocked out by McGregor, but Conor is not infallible. He is a guy that could be beaten. We've already seen him be beaten the last year and a half. To a guy who wasn't even contending for a title.
Look, two-time champion, you know, 45 and 55 weight classes. I mean, good Lord. That's
But again, outside of the Aldo fight, was Eddie Alvarez really, like, if we were doing the list of the best champions at the time, when Eddie Alvarez held the strap, would he be pretty high up?
Well, I mean, no, but, I mean, would you have thought RDA would have been pretty high up when he held the belt? I mean, he looked like an absolute axe murderer when he was the champion, and Alvarez ran right through him. So it's all just, anything can happen in a fight, you know what I mean? It's just one of those things. Like, you can take a shot, you could get punched in the liver, you could get punched and have a rib break or something, and it can change everything drastically. I mean, your pain tolerance, your cardio, everything can change from one shot, and that happens from one fight to the next. We're all human beings. Just like that song we were doing earlier, you know, My Name is Human. It's the truth, you know. So to me, the body of work, the impressiveness of wins, the overcoming of odds, all that stuff factors into it for me.
I just look at Conor and I say he gets into guys' heads, and that is a factor to it. But I still, if he was fighting a little bit more regularly inside the octagon and fighting and defending his title, he hasn't defended any titles yet, really, when you think about it. Has he defended the? He didn't defend to Aldo after, or to anyone else, right?
He beat Aldo,
and then he fought Diaz twice, and then he fought Alvarez, and hasn't fought since.
All right,
defend a title, and then I'll put you up the list a little bit. Is what I would say. That's the only reason I have him at four.
All right. Well, I have my third one as Joanna champion Jędrzejczyk. I love her. I think she's great. That last fight that she had though against Kovalevich, you saw that she could be hurt, and I thought she might have been on her way to losing the title there. But she overcame it. I think she's amazing. I just have her at number three just because I like a couple of individuals just a little bit better.
And I know who those individuals are.
Mm-hmm.
My number three, Daniel Cormier.
Okay.
I like DC. He has one loss in his career. It was to John Jones. And I think when he finally gets Bones in the cage one more time, he is going to avenge that loss.
I hope you're right.
He looks like a motivated guy. He's run through the light heavyweights. He's defended a title. He got the title initially, then he's defended it in some really, really difficult environments. And ever since then, he's just looked like a beast. He seems more settled. He might be winding down his career, too. I heard a couple interviews with him where he said, I don't have to do this forever because I've made my money. He's a great talker. Mm-hmm. He could go into professional wrestling if he wanted to.
No, I love DC. I hope he does beat Jones when they match up.
But, I mean, ever since he beat Rumble for the first time, then defended the title now twice, and including having to face Anderson Silva because John Jones backed out. Now, if John Jones hadn't had these issues with drugs off the cage side and whatnot, we could be talking about him being the greatest of all time or number one in our pound for pounds. But
right
now, I'm going to say DC is my number three. I like what he's bringing to the table. He's defending. He's not really shying away from fights. And honestly, he could win a heavyweight title. I'd love to see him versus Stipe. If they ever decide to do
that would be awesome. I do think Stipe would absolutely murk him, though. I think it'd be a knockout.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. I think Stipe's that good.
It'd be a fun one to match up with just because you got the wrestling power and prowess of DC. And
I think Stipe, he's a legitimate heavyweight, and Cormier can make middleweight if he could get his diet in check.
Well, he was actually going to fight as a heavyweight, but he didn't want to compete against Kane. And he was
a heavyweight.
Yeah, he was going to have to fight with Kane eventually, but he said, hey, we're teammates, we're training partners, we're not going to do that.
Well, and he shouldn't be fighting at heavyweight. I mean, he did a great job at heavyweight, but he should be. He's even better at lower weight classes. So, anyways, now here's where things get interesting for me, Brian, and I don't really care what anybody thinks about it, because you know what? This is my pound-for-pound champions list.
Don't tell me you did
it's
this.
It's mine. And this is what I think. Look, you hold two belts. You hold two belts. You're the GOAT. You're the greatest, all right? I'm going to come back. I'm going to beat Floyd Mayweather. I'm going to take his belt. I'm going to be the best boxing pound-for-pound fighter ever on the planet, Brian. I don't care if my Conor impersonation isn't as good as it could be, but I'm working on it, all right? So I have Mighty Mouse in number two, and I'm the best. I'm number one.
You're absolutely insane, man. You are insane. Conor McGregor is not the number one pound-for-pound fighter.
I don't care.
And if you go to UFC.com/rankings, you'll see Conor listed as number two, which I still think is foolish because people buy into the hype. I love Conor. I bought into the hype a long time ago. But, man, he's got to go out there and prove it. He lost to Nate Diaz, who wasn't even in at title consideration before. At 170, I know it was short notice, and then he barely squeaked out a win the next fight against Nate Diaz.
I just want to know, you're talking smack about me or something, you know? Like, I'm right here.
Oh,
you can
he's
say
a
it
great
to my
fighter.
Face.
He's a great fighter, and I think he deserves a title shot, too, because he proved himself against a guy who now holds two titles or used to. He deserves a title shot here eventually as well. But, man, come on. And we're going to see him get his ass kicked in a boxing ring here soon.
Well, maybe. We'll see what happens there.
Whoa. You don't think he's going to...
Look, Floyd Mayweather's 40 years old. He's 40 years old.
Yeah, he's the greatest pound-for-pound fighter probably in the history of boxing.
And, yes, that is true. That is true. But I do think Conor has a way better chance in a boxing match against Floyd than Floyd would have in a mixed martial arts matchup against Conor. Obviously Conor,
because boxing is a discipline of MMA
and Conor trains it all. So, but I do think that he has a puncher's chance. He has the reach. He's the younger guy. I do think that there's a shot that he has at winning this fight. And you couldn't say the same thing about Floyd Mayweather in a mixed martial arts matchup. So again, maybe call me fanboying out of about Conor. I don't care. I love this guy. To what he has done, how excited I get about a Conor McGregor fight. I can't put it into words. It's like a little kid on Christmas that's waiting to open up his big present. Yep. You know, I'm waiting for my new PS, you know, 2 or whatever it was back in the day. Like, that's how I feel about Conor McGregor. He gets me amped up every time. The lead up to the fight to me is magical. I can't wait to get home to watch all the embeds on YouTube, to watch everything, all, you know, the UFC countdown, all the lead up to it. That's all because of Conor McGregor, man. So to me, he's at the top of my list.
DJ, I got to say, number one. Until someone knocks him out, I mean, come on.
And I understand why. I can't disagree.
Come on.
I can't disagree.
And Joanna, she's looked a little, not necessarily beatable, but still. I mean, come on. Conor McGregor is your number one. By the way, just real quick, pound for pound rankings. DJ, number one. Conor, two. DC, three. Aldo, four. Stipe, five. Garbrandt, six. Joanna, seven. And then the next champion is Tyrone at 9. 10 for Bisbing. Amanda Nunes, number 11.
Wow.
And this is by media experts and people who can contribute to UFC.com. So you can tell us what your opinion is. Are we idiots? Are we stupid? You can send that to us. Make sure to check out our Facebook page, The Main, M-A-I-N-E, Event. And also, just leave us a little feedback there. We also have some chances for you to win some stuff here in the future and some more exciting news down the pipeline.
Always a pleasure, Brian. We'll see you guys next time.
Peace.